The Hindustan Times calls you simply hysterical. The Pioneer calls him the funniest kid in India. Verve, India's only true comic. And the Indian Express calls him the unstoppable gag machine. With 35 plays, 100 plus stand-up comedy shows, 8 TV shows, and 6 comedy specials in his kitty, today we have amidst us the laughter sensation of India, Mr. Veer Das.
Hello. Okay, cool.
Hello, sir. Firstly, we would like to thank you for taking out time and interacting with us. We are all delighted to have you here with us today. So, sir, starting off with your childhood days, you lived in Nigeria, and would you just tell us about your experience in Nigeria and how life was there?
There's construction happening behind us, but that's okay. All right. So life in Nigeria was not very easy. It's not a very safe place. So a lot of us stayed in these compounds with a lot of security outside the compound. And it's not really the kind of place where you could... I think your phone's dead.
No, okay.
It's not really the kind of place where you could go outside and play cricket or ride your bike, etc. And so I think for that reason, I learned to read a lot and to watch a lot of films, and your kind of imagination overdevelops, if that makes sense, because of where you are and how limited you are. I left Nigeria at an early age. My parents continued to stay there, but I went to boarding school up north in Sanaa. And I was there for about 4.5-5 years, till I was very politely asked to leave. But I think what Nigeria did is it just got me to be a very imaginative kid. So yeah, there you go.
So from a not-so-safe life in Nigeria to studying economics and theatre at Knox College in the US, and then pursuing a 7-month acting course at Howard in Cambridge, and then coming back to India. So my question to you is, how has this kind of a formal education influenced the brand Veer Das?
It's really influenced the brand Veer Das. In terms of anything I studied in school, I don't remember at all, because I was a science with economics student, and I was kind of in a school where if you didn't study science or business or something, you were... Humanities matlab meant you were a failure right off the bat, you know what I'm saying? And I've always been an athlete and a performer. So I think my 10th boards, I got something like 43% overall. And my 12th boards, I got something like 51%. So, yeah, but like 90% of kids in Delhi would commit suicide with those results, you know what I mean? So I wanted to study political science, and the cutoff was 84%. And I think I had like 54% or something like that. So I got 10% for debating, 10% for dramatics, 10% for basketball. So that took me up from 54% to 84%, and I got into the program. So everything that my parents were telling me not to do actually saved my ass in the end. At Knox College, I was in this educational system that was fabulous, because it was a very small college, only 1,800 kids, where most universities in the US have a lot. It was a very academically focused college. They prided took pride in the fact that at Harvard, the average student reads about maybe, I think, 400 pages a week. But at Knox College, we read 550 pages a week. You know, so they were very academically focused. I got to study many different things. That really helped me, because it was a liberal arts education. So I got to study Greek philosophy, intro to psychology, jazz drumming, science fiction, you know, along with public speaking and theater and drama. So that really, it helps you in terms of being academically enthusiastic. So when it came time to write a show about the history of India or this and that, etc., I was able to do the research and be enthusiastic about that. So yeah.
In your previous interviews, you've stated that you're a quiet artist off stage. A very quiet artist, basically. So what is it that transforms a quiet guy into a extremely quick-witted, energetic, spontaneous, and broad-minded performer on stage, basically?
I think it's facets to your personality, you know what I mean? Some people go to the gym and they take their anger out on a punching bag or a weight machine. I just get on stage and talk about my problems, and I talk about life as such. I'm a Gemini, so I've always had sort of different sides to my personality. On stage, since I was 4 years old, or in front of the camera, any kind of performance space is the only place I've really been fearless and comfortable since I was 4 years old. If you put me in front of a camera, if you put me in front of a stage, I was at home, very, very comfortable. So It's just a different person, you know what I mean? Like, on stage, I'm an asshole, you know what I mean? I'm not a very nice guy at all. And I like to think I'm a very nice guy off stage, you know? So, I'm kind of happy that that persona exists there, if that makes sense. Because if all my brashness and all my rudeness and all my anger and all of my assholic tendencies are taken out on a stage, then when I come home to my family or my girlfriend or my dog or my friends, that side of me doesn't exist anymore. So I think it's a healthy thing to have. Yeah.
But then, do you find it tough to switch on and switch off? I mean, like, once you get down, you're like the normal Veerdas, and once you get on, you're like the assholic Veerdas.
It took a couple of years. I think comedians, the most irritating thing for a humorous guy is if he's always on. If he's always like, hey, this joke, that joke, then you can't go to dinner with that guy. You want to kill him, you know what I'm saying? So for me, it took a while, took some years to not always be performing. I think best when I'm silent. I think best when I'm in silence. So you have to understand what my job is, all right? My job is what? I get on a stage and I see now between 6,000 to 10,000 new faces in front of me every single week. My job is noise. In a film set, there are 100 people screaming. In a stand-up comedy show, every 7 to 14 seconds, there are 4,000 people sending you laughter. You are screaming. So when I get off that environment, it's so good to be in silence and just to be alone. When I travel, I'll travel with my girlfriend, I'll travel with my managers, and I won't say anything for 4 hours. I'll just sit aram se. I'm happy in that silence because you have to understand what my job is. It's noise. That's the entirety of my job is noise. So yeah.
Getting serious from now on. Turning producer after your newest venture, the Veerdas repertory, definitely means you want to promote upcoming talent. So what would it be like? What are the steps that you basically are taking to promote new talent?
I think so. New talent just kind of always found me because I'm an academic person. I like teaching. I like building teams, etc. So ever since I started Veerdas, we always were getting 20 emails a week. Now that's 200 emails a week, but we were getting 20 emails a week saying, I want to do this, I'm not sure, can I come and try it out with you guys, etc., etc., etc. At some point, touch wood, you kind of say, okay, God's been good to me, I'm comfortable. I have a nice house, I drive an okay car, I'm not the kind of person who defines himself by luxury. So I'm not always striving for that bigger house or striving for that bigger car. So I've got some money left over. And what do I do with that money? I'd like to build a legacy with it. You know what I mean? When Mr. Ghai passes on, Whistling Woods will be his legacy, no? At the end of the day. And it won't matter what car he drove, and it won't matter what house he lived in. This is what will matter. So to me, that's incredibly important. What is my place in history? Am I a guy who looked good on a camera? Am I a guy who danced well? Am I a guy who did something that lasted for 40 years? So, yeah.
I mean, you accept it or not, but then you are a celebrity. I mean, there are lots of people who look up to you. I mean, so how do you manage being a celebrity, basically? From a normal life to a celebrity?
By exactly how you said it, by not accepting it. I refuse to accept it. Certain things have changed in my life where privacy has gone out of the window. Anonymity has gone out of the window. So I can't be at a public space without people looking at you or people recognizing who you are. And I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with that. I love taking an auto rickshaw to the airport and being at a red light next to a guy in a Rolls or a BMW and then sitting next to that guy in business class. I love doing that. You know what I mean? I think you need to do things to ground yourself continuously. Celebrities live in a bubble. If you notice the people sitting outside just this room, they're all regular, normal people, and I surround myself with those people. I'm in a happy place where I have a very healthy equation and a good respect with everybody within the entertainment industry. But that's where it ends. You know, where I'm hoping that if they say, hey, Veerdas, he does good work. They won't say, hey, Veerdas, I partied with him yesterday, we went to Ibiza, we did this, etc., etc., etc. But from the top guy to the bottom guy in the industry, I'm hoping he'll say, Veerdas, he does good work. And to me, that's a great place to be. I don't want to be, I went to air with Veer Das yesterday, etc., etc., etc. No. As long as they keep saying Veer Das does good work, from Yash Raj down to the newest producer, I'll be very happy with that. That's all I need.
So, we all know that Mr. Veer Das is a multi-talented artist, no doubt, singing, acting, stand-up. So I wanted to ask you, how difficult is it to prioritize between, a shoot for a movie or a Alien Chutney gig or a stand-up comedy act? How do you prioritize and how do you manage to create a balance between all these things in which you participate?
You have to understand that it's three different people doing those three different things. You know what I mean? And all those three different people need to live. Right? So when I'm on stage, it's yelling and everything is packed into 90 minutes and there's a response to everything I say. And it's about saying 500 things in 90 minutes. So that's the most energetic, adrenaline-based side of my personality there is. When I'm doing a film, it's about saying one thing in 500 different ways. It's about spreading it out over 9 hours. It's about getting into the detail of why did I take my phone and just do that with it, right? Instead of just running. So it's the most intellectual left side of your brain that you're using then. And it's about silence and detail. When I'm on stage with Alien Chutney, that's just vulgar fun. You know what I mean? That's free energy. So I'm not thinking about making people laugh. I'm just thinking, what is the tune? This is a stupid song. I'm enjoying it. So that's the most immature thing I do on a daily basis. So one gives me a chance to be an athlete. One gives me a chance to be academic. And one gives me a chance to be a child. So at different points in your life or your day, you'll need that. I hate being in a vanity van for 10 hours. I hate it. So if I'm able to go out and perform for 4,000 people and come back to the vanity van, then I feel like, okay. You know what I mean? I hate traveling. I don't want to be on the road in you know, 30 cities in 40 days. So to be on a film set for 10 days before I travel again, that grounds me as well. You know? And then just going out and saying fuck a lot and saying bastard and man boob and this and that gives me the strength to do those two other things as well. So it's more of a balance than you think it is. So
you have said in an interview that the enigma moment of you actually deciding to become an actor was after watching Rang De Basanti.
Yeah.
So would you just tell us what was in your mind at that moment after watching that movie?
To me, Rang De Basanti was a turning point in cinema because A, it was an Aamir Khan film and we all will go and watch an Aamir Khan film first day, first show. But it was an Aamir Khan film that took new directions and promoted new talent. I loved Siddharth in Rang De Basanti. I loved what he did with that role and he barely said anything. You know what I mean? But to me, it was amazing that we could give that kind of screen time and directorial presence to a guy who had very little dialogues. Arjun Rampal in Rock On, that's a great example of good direction. If you read the script of Rock On, you'd see he said nothing during the film. But you're confident enough in that director to make you... So I thought that was brilliant, which showed a sign of new filmmaking. The fact that a four-person with fleshed-out, rounded characters, the music was young and fresh as well. So I was like, okay, now I want to get into movies. This is it.
So we've read that your first official stand-up was at Knox College, which was called Brown Men Can't Hump. Yeah? So my question to you is, is there any change you make in the content while you're performing for a foreign audience? Because we know there are many cultural restrictions in India, but is there, in simple words, does the content depend upon the audience while you're performing for a stand-up act?
Yes, it does. You have to change, I think, a lot of your show for where you are, depending on where you're performing. In India, things require less of a setup. So if I say Gujarati, you immediately know what a Gujarati is. If I say Bollywood, you know what Bollywood is. If I go to America, I kind of have to explain for 30 seconds what a Gujarati person is. I kind of have to explain for 30 seconds what Bollywood is. So it's just about contexts and setups, if that makes sense. So yeah.
Coming back to stand-up comedy and theater, which requires you to be loud and expressive. Acting, on the other hand, requires you to mellow down your instincts. How was this unlearning experience for you, basically?
I think I was so afraid the first time I did a movie that I would be very loud and like, because you're always performing to like 7,000 people, right? I think maybe I so underplayed it out of fear that I didn't act at all. You know what I mean? So it was probably just one expression. Because the first real film I did was a film called Mumbai Salsa, which nobody saw, right? But like five people, my grandmom, my girlfriend, we went and saw this film. So I was so afraid of overdoing it because of my stage this thing that I, you know, and it had been so long since I recalled any of my acting training. Like acting was like an ex-girlfriend I've gotten back together with after 5 year ka break and all of that stuff. I'm a very instinctual actor in that I don't really care about my lines. I care about what's in between them and I really like to listen a lot more than I like to act. So film-wise, it's important for an actor like me to have a very good editor because a lot of my acting happens right before I speak to that character or while I'm listening to what that character says, you'll see a lot of change in me. And sometimes an editor can miss that. And he'll just kind of go to you for the line, which is a very old school way of editing. So to me, it's really, really important to work with the right people, if that makes sense.
All the characters you've played on Celluloid were far from quintessential Bollywood lead characters. Yeah. When a script comes your way, what is that element you search for in the character you're asked to play?
Look, I think in terms of your quintessential Bollywood lead characters, it's a box and it's a trap. It's this chocolatey six-pack, not enough rom, not enough com kind of a role. And it's so easy to get stuck there. And it reduces your shelf life so much because there's a new chocolate boy every single week. And if you were a chocolate boy 4 years ago, if you were launched 4 years ago, today you're fighting being outdated. Because there's guys who were launched last week. So it's a big trap and I never wanted to do that. In any case, half the people, if you still ask, a lot of people will say, I have no business being in the movies because I kind of bypassed all the casting directors in the audition lines and I shortcutted my way into it, right? Through stand-up comedy. But I think right now there's this space for what Adam Sandler did and what Ben Stiller did and what Steve Carell did and what Will Ferrell did, what these guys did in the West. The Indian market is ready for that. You just have to work your way up. So yeah, I've started with small roles in films, but they keep getting bigger and they keep getting slightly better as well. And sometimes I'll dip out of that and do a Shaadi Ke Side Effects just to have fun, you know what I mean? And to be naked on screen and do drugs and do this thing, etc. But there's a space for that Indian comedic leading man or that actor with range. And there's a couple of us who are trying to do that. Rajkumar and you know, Rajkumar is another actor who's worked his way up. He's got a small role in Queen. He's got a lead role in Shahid. If you look at Revolver Rani, it's my first real romantic pairing and it's a very dark drama. Right after that is Amit Sahni Ki List, which is me and six girls and it's a rom-com. The film after that is Santa and Banta, the movie, me and Bamane Rani, commercial comedy. I'm growing a beard right now for a film called 1984, which is a drama about the Sikh riots with me and Soha Ali Khan. So, I'm in a leading space in these films. But I'm still not playing the quintessential Bollywood hero. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't want to be in that trap. You know what I'm saying? Because the minute I start doing that, there's some guy with a bigger six-pack. There's some guy with a better godfather. There's some guy with a foot more in height. There's some and they're all fighting a very quick outdation shelf life. I'm having fun, man. I don't care if it's big or small. You'll watch that movie and you'll say I'm good. That's all that matters, right? At the end of the day.
Now coming to your band Alien Chutney, undoubtedly one of the most highly anticipated bands at music festivals like NH7.
Yeah.
Widely popular for its quirky lyrics and funky music, would you like to tell us what inspired you to create a band with an out-of-the-box approach towards music?
So I've been writing music for a while. So I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't buy expensive things, but I'm addicted to guitars. So I have like, I have 25 guitars right now, and acoustics and electrics. So that's my one real addiction that I have. So I've always been very musically inclined. And so I started writing these stupid songs when I was in college, and a lot of serious songs as well. So at some point I planned to bring out just sort of an acoustic-y singer-songwriter serious album as well. And I started doing these songs at the end of a stand-up comedy show, doing one song or two songs, and everybody was like, wow, why don't you do a band? So then I met Sid Kuto and Warren and Posey and Gaurav and Kezad and Johan and started jamming. And then that first NH7 that we did, we pulled the largest crowd of the festival, that whole festival. Yeah. It was insane. It was madness. And I never thought it would be this big, because Alien Chutney is this band that polarizes people. You either love us or you fucking hate us. You know what I mean? Like, matlab, they should be blown up and thrown away. You know, like, so... Now, I'm sorry, you have an SMS, huh? Now, it's I don't know what to do with Alien Chutney. I'm being very honest with you. Because our college following is like, matlab...
Yeah,
it's insane, right? We're riding on cool factor right now. You have to keep cool factor. You can't overdo it. You can't over-milk it either. You just got to... If you want to stay cool, you got to be cool. You know what I mean? So, I'm just kind of cooling off right now. Because right now, Alien Chutney is at the bottom of the barrel. There's no place to go but up. We can't be a worse band. Nobody could hate us more than the amount of people that hate us right now. Right? At a music festival, this NH7, we pulled 8,000 people. But for those 8,000 people, there were still 8,000 people who said, I hate those guys, they suck, fuck off. I'm not saying them.
Exactly.
Right? So, the only place to go is for that 8,000 to turn into 16,000. I have still to figure out how to do that. I don't know. I need to get a lot better as a vocalist and as a guitarist for that to happen. So, that's what I'm working on now.
Just to continue with that, how do you manage criticism? I mean, like, for the number of people who love you, there's an equal number of the people that hate you.
Yeah.
Or rather, find you offensive. So how do you manage that, basically?
I don't. Like I said, my entire career is based on doing things that people never thought I would be able to do, right? When I came to India, there's no comedians. There's no other comedy rock bands. In this comedic leading man space, outside of me and Kunal Roy Kapoor, there's nobody else right now. Ranveer Shore, Vinay Pathak, these are men who headlined comedy films, did great jobs as leads in these films. Younger versions of those guys are needed. So Kunal and I are kind of taking that responsibility as well. But did you think, if you saw me 5 years ago and you told me I was going to be in movies or headlining movies, we'd both tell each other to fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, neither one of us would believe the other person. So, for every one person that likes you, there will be six that hate you. And I'm perfectly all right with that. But the one person who likes you should never accuse you of mediocrity. You should always keep that person surprised and happy. So
we're done with the serious stuff.
Okay.
We'd like to play a small game with you. I'm just going to say a word and you tell me what comes to your mind first. Africa.
Home.
Bombay.
Transient home.
Sex.
Career.
Critics.
Invalid.
Sunny Leon.
Hardworking.
Man boobs.
Punjab.
Okay, so lastly, we would really like you to sing a song which you think describes your life.
Just
a couple of lines.
Huh?
Yeah.
A song that describes my life.
Yeah.
Probably with the guitar.
Guitar I won't do because then there's a thing, but... I won't even sing it. I just think Babaji ki booty describes my life. Except that I don't smoke.
Yeah.
But I really believe I'm high. You know what I mean? 90% of my life is some sort of high. So that's what I think describes my life, is that I'm on this, like, some sort of magic booty that maybe other people are smoking that make them want to give me movies and give me stage shows. And I think I'm overpriced and spend all this money on my tickets and come and see my band. So I'm just really, really high on all of this stuff. And the biggest fear is at some point everybody's going to sober up and tell me to fuck off. But we're all high still. So yeah, that's that.
It was wonderful talking to you, sir. Thank you so much for taking out your time and talking to us. We wish you all the best for your future. And on behalf of my group and me, we really thank you a lot.
Well, I just want to say I'm very, very happy that you guys came out. I've built a career on college kids and you know them liking what I do. So I'm very, very happy that you consider me worthy of this. Don't study too hard and try and experience as much as you read. That's the only thing I would tell you guys. And just keep killing it.
So could you tell our teacher to give us full marks for this?
Yes, and ma'am or sir?
Lily ma'am,
please, these are four very hardworking kids who came all the way to Bandra for their, is this your thesis or your some sort of submission? For this assignment. Bandra's a very dangerous place with lots of angry old Catholic uncles, and they've survived that. And they've sat in my very tiny office. And the hardest work they've done is they've thought up all of these fake compliments to pay me. so please give these four young filmmakers and students as many marks as you would. Full marks, I'm sorry. 110%. Chalo, give them that. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.